Jay Finning here, and I want to tell you guys about 4Wheel Online. For over a decade, 4Wheel Online has been bringing the best truck accessories and truck parts to enhance the appearance and performance of all trucks and SUVs. They are dedicated to providing an extensive range of upgrades that will match any maker model on the road. Their truck products cover everything you need to give your truck a custom look and added functionality. And if you need a tire and wheel package, head over and use the configuration tool. They carry all the major brands of wheels and tires, so go get outfitted today. So visit them online at 4Wheel Online or call them at 813-769-2451. Again, that's 4Wheel Online, the number 4Wheel Online. This is the Hard Parking Podcast, brought to you by Right Honda out of Scottsdale, Arizona. In studio with me is Bo Jung. Bo, welcome to the Hard Parking Podcast.
Hello, Jay. It's nice to be here.
You've gone through a few cars since I've known you. You had the NSX, the Nyacat NSX. Yep. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. And it got wrecked by some kid who ran the light, if I recall correctly.
That is also correct.
Then you had a Lexus for a while.
A couple now, but the first one was an ISF.
You liked for a while, but then you didn't. What happened with that?
Okay, so I absolutely adored that car. The issue primarily with that car is that the 8-speed ISN transmission that's in it has a sort of a beginner shift logic because it was one of the first 8-speeds on the market. So the issue with that is that when it would do a kick down from eighth for fuel saving reasons to down to third or fourth or second, the shifting times would be agonizingly slow. If you shift with the paddles in manual mode, it'll stay and hang revs and do everything appropriately, but it'll only be crisp and fast for one shift for about a second. So if you want to kick down from eight to fourth or eight to fifth, anything more than two gears, and the planetary gear set inside that automatic will essentially just start delaying everything. So you get the first shift quickly, and then you get and over time it'll just dramatically go slower. And I hate to be petty kind of like this, but I was in a role with somebody in the deep dark recesses of Mexico. I got a little bit of a late start, but I also wasn't in the right gear. And by the time the transmission found the right gear, the Camaro SS, which in theory has equivalent horsepower, equivalent numbers, was at least a car length ahead of me. So I realized then that, especially for passing power when you're stuck in stop and go traffic.
Was that a 1SS or 2SS?
I couldn't tell from the trim. It was a nighttime. It looked like a 2SS from what I recall in memory, but this was back in 2017 or 2016. So it's been a while.
Side note, one of my favorite rental cars ever, 2SS. Right.
The chassis is actually pretty good. And I say that like it's a surprise, but I think it's pretty well known in enthusiast communities that Camaro chassis, especially the Epsilon and Alpha platforms for those generations, they're quite solid. But in theory, I should have had the jump on them because I've got better gear ratios, but the transmission just didn't kick down in time. And I find that also to be an issue when you're in stop and go traffic, when you change lanes and you need that burst of speed. If you're not in the right gear already, it won't send it to you. So that was its major Achilles heel. Everything else was pretty good about the car and I absolutely adored it, but I wanted a quicker, faster thing. I'm hooked on horsepower and that's all I wanted to do is just get more and more and more. And that's what happened. I traded it in for a Corvette Z06. And in retrospect, I should have just bought the Z06 and kept that car too. But I didn't think about that until after the fact.
So this weekend you were shopping around and you actually hit me up a couple of days ago and asked about different cars and they're all so very different. What is your process in trying to buy a car? Because everybody who listens to this at some point in their life is going to buy a car. It's not necessarily going to go out and buy a bunch of high performance cars, but I think there's principles to everyone in knowing what they want out of a car. Like I could want that Dodge Neon really bad until I drive it.
Yes.
And find out that it's a steaming pile of shit and it makes a lot of noise and it's the dashboard is plastic.
I mean, hopefully you would know that before for that specific example, but I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, no, it's I had to think of an extreme example, which by the way, I had a Neon for 4 years.
Yes.
But yeah, well, going into this, so tell us what cars you're mulling between. Why are you looking to get out of your Z06 if you are at all? And, you know, who's the front runner and why?
I think I'll first start with a why. I think that's probably the easiest thing to do. And a lot of it actually has to do with my lovely wife. A lot of times I just start talking about cars that I like and talking about cars that I want. And she bless her soul, she is the one who has to listen to the vast majority of that car talk. She actually calls it car bingo, because anytime I see something on the street, I'll start immediately talking about it. And we have a system now where I only do that in certain reserved slots and time zones. So it all works out well. But because I use her as a sounding board for basically most of my impulsive, irrational decisions, see if they make sense to somebody else, and she's got a good head on her shoulders, so she's always good to refer things off of. So what happened is that the why started with, and I don't want to be too negative, but it started with a pretty poor experience in customer service for my Corvette. Now, there are a lot of Chevrolet dealers in the area, and I'm not going to point names or fingers, but basically what happened is that over the course of a couple of years, I've been to many of them for something like a Z06, which is relatively expensive. And
it's a $120,000 car.
Yeah.
MSRP.
It needs a lot of TLC. Well, 120 is probably pushing it unless you got all the options. And of course you can do that like a Porsche. You can get anything you want. Like, yeah, I want carbon fiber around the, you know, the seats of my pants or whatever. But
why would you not do that?
Because it adds $3,000 every time you check a checkbox on the website, Jay. That's why.
Okay.
So, right. You know, you do that 3 or 4 times and all of a sudden you realize that maybe you could have just bought a Miata with the money that you paid. But, the idea became that I was having a pretty negative experience and, I also have a Lexus again. So, the service experience that I have in the Lexus that I have now, which is a GSF, which is just like the spiritual successor of the ISF I used to have, it's night and day difference between that and Chevy dealerships, right? And you're paying for that experience. So it kind of, you know, you have to have a sense of proportion. But what happened is that the Chevy experience was so not great for me, between like wait times and bad scheduling and just people, like service dealers not being knowledgeable about what I want, that I started looking for something that might be just a little bit more well-regarded in terms of class and service. And that's how the kind of the Porsche question came about. Because let's face it, the Z06 is super fast, right? Really fast.
Yeah.
And that's base numbers, and mine is modified so that it's going in faster in a straight line. And so in order to find something that's equivalently fast, there are not a whole lot of options that are going to make that cut. And so Porsche came up almost immediately because they have turbos, and the turbo ones are quite quick in a straight line. They have all-wheel drive, and that sort of got the ball going, because I've been to a couple of Porsche dealerships now, and the experience was much, much better just talking to their salespeople.
Why do you think you've had such a bad experience with the Chevy dealerships? Do you think it's too high of a volume where they're just, you know, like Porsche is very concentrated?
Yeah. Probably a part of it is just me being kind of just a little bit spoiled with my previous experiences, right? Lexus has treated me really well, so shout out to them. Because of that, I wanted to be able to pull into a dealer and say, hey, here's my issue, and they understand it right away. You can text your service advisor at any time. They'll always respond, in business hours. And
you don't drunk text your advisor at 3 a.m.?
Oh, I do. I do. And they're nice about it because, the next day in the morning, they'll be like, okay, hello, Bo. You know, hey, looks like you got up to some, you know, fun times. And, you know, then they'll work with you about what you need to do and when they're available and stuff like that. So that kind of colored my perceptual bias.
Sure.
And I don't think it's anything they did personally, but let's face it, we've got a couple of kind of stressful years underneath us now, you know, between the beginning of 2020 to now. Logistics are a little bit more strained, parts are harder to find, and there's a shortage of labor in a lot of places too. So I think all those combinations of factors got together and, things are just taking longer than they should. People weren't as good as, you know, they should be when they're dealing with stuff like this. And essentially, I didn't want the same experience as someone showing up with like a Chevy Trax and saying, hey, I need an oil change, but that's essentially how kind of that all fell through. So I wanted something more, and I realized that I've been very fortunate in my life, and I wanted to, you know, shoot for something a little bit more expensive so that I could try to get more of that level of service.
My name is Bo. I drive a Z06. You will bow down to me.
That is not what I said.
I think it's because you're an Asian dude driving a Z06.
Oh, that's true. I am Asian, actually. In fact, I know that my accent may not actually indicate that, because there is about 20% redneck floating around me somewhere, simply because how I was raised.
That's a conservative number. And someone who knows you, yeah, that's a conservative number.
We can talk about, the restaurants I like later, because that's going to come in heavy into play. But I'm an Asian guy, and I do like fast sports cars, and I do think that domestics especially, you know, from Chevrolet and from Ford, they make really, really nice high performance cars. And I believe that everyone deserves to have a fair shot with those as well, without that stigma that can sometimes happen with some of these industries. And honestly, a lot of my opinions about that were colored by Car and Driver's lightning lap. Now, everybody, you know, everybody is a benchmark racer. Anybody can go on Wikipedia and argue stats all day long. But if you look at the lightning lap times, the aggregate times from 2006 all the way up to now, the Chevrolet Corvette Z06 for 2015 with a Z07 package is something like 15th or 16th out of a list of hundreds. And only very few cars kind of exceed that lap time. And I got drawn to that right away. And then I test drove it, and that's when it cemented the deal. To this day, I have never test driven another car and uttered a sweet Jesus when I took it on the on-ramp and really gave it the beans. That was like, that's what got me sold on that.
So what are you shopping for now then? Because I know you've mentioned Porsche, but we still don't know. Porsche. Yeah.
That's the roundabout way.
Are you going to replace the Z06? Maybe, curiosity, or what are we looking at here?
Yeah, so it would be replacing the Z06. Now, I mean, financially, it probably just makes sense. The cars are mostly retaining value, and it's a convenient way to sort of swap and try something new.
Mm-hmm.
Not just Porsches, but I'm looking for something that still triggers that enthusiast driving itch. I would have to basically give up the Z06, but that's okay. I still have a Lexus at home, and I also have a Honda Cross Tour that I can use to take to IKEA and bring back boxes.
I don't even know what that is.
A Honda Cross Tour is one of the first crossovers on the market. It came to the market in the early 2010s, I think, and it is literally just a lifted Accord with a weird looking hatch that doesn't really fit much.
I think I've seen those, actually. Mm-hmm.
Now, the fun part is that they actually started out, the top trim started out something at like 40K MSRP.
It's like a modern day Brat.
Yeah, it kind of is. if the Brat had like a hatch on it, right? So, yeah. You know, think like Toyota Venza, only lumpier and less interesting. But they were so unpopular because they were so expensive and kind of not good looking that they depreciated like stones, and at the 3 or 4 year mark, you could pick one up that used to be 40 grand for something like 22. And I jumped on that right away because the only other competitor in that segment at the time is a Subaru Outback, which actually has a better layout and a better setup, but they are always $5,000 more. So I picked that up for, you know, a decent price, and just basically powered through it. It's a Honda, they last very long time. And I still own it to this day, and it's got 90,000 miles on it, and I put like 50,000 of those on myself, and it still runs like a trooper, mechanically perfectly sound. I think the volume knob has an issue. That's about it.
Bo.
Yeah.
What cars are you driving this weekend?
Okay. Yeah.
What have you done this weekend?
Let's go back to that. I realized, sorry about the tangent there.
No, it's okay. That's why you're here.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, so what cars did I drive? Let me start from the beginning. I basically just singled out the Porsche 911 Turbo from the 991 era. So we're talking between 2013 and the 991.2 start in 2017, go all the way to 2019, right? They go from 0 to 60 in about 3 seconds just for the base turbo. So that's pretty on par with the Z06. So I immediately went there. So I test drove a 2014 Porsche 911 Turbo. And they were super nice about it. It's a Scottsdale dealership that isn't affiliated directly with Porsche, but they basically handed me the keys and said, go for it. And it's quick.
You're a pure numbers person?
I am not a pure numbers person,
like one.
But I do know a lot of numbers. So yeah. they factor in heavily to what I do because I can't always just go out and say, hey, let me test drive your $100,000 thing.
Sure.
Yeah. So, you know, there's got to be some there. And I'm a pretty busy guy. I'm always in front of my computer doing something, trying something else. And, you know, work is busy too. So the numbers have to come first, but then you have to back it up with the experience. And that thing was fast, right? I drove it. It's planted. It's stable. It's quite comfortable. Everything kind of ticks all the boxes, and it's a great all-rounder.
I mean, side note, I think that's what makes the C7 and now even the C8 so attractive, is because it can hang with the big boys at a fraction of the cost. But that doesn't mean that Chevy has sacrificed on trim level in materials necessarily either. Like like an old school, like a 90s muscle car, 2000s muscle car. I mean, you knew you were driving something cheap. Who cares if you could beat a Ferrari down the drag strip? you're still driving something cheap. But
yeah,
Chevy's kind of stepped it up lately. So
yes, I personally believe that the C7 generation, which started in 2014, that's when they really started to make some nice ergonomic, you know, living adjustments to the interiors. They use better materials. I've got carbon fiber and suede in my Z06, and it is a much nicer place than getting a base model Corvette. So they really upped their game, and they got a wonderful tech package in them. So you get a HUD, you've got magnetic shocks, you know, you've got all sorts of nice quality of living things, properties to that car. And the Porsche sometimes doesn't actually come with some of those, and it's more expensive. But their ergonomics are always sound. Their engineering and driving dynamics are always sound. So if anybody is a driving enthusiast, you should probably almost always go look at a Porsche just to see how you feel about them.
Like I heard the Cayman GT4s are pretty exciting.
Yes. And they are very solid cars as well. You know, that's all about driver purity. So to try and answer the actual question you're asking me, first
as
came
I
the
tried
911.
To pulled you on a little side trip there, so my
yeah,
bad.
That's true. But, you know, it's a two-way conversation, Jay. So I appreciate your input just as much as you would appreciate mine, maybe a little bit more. But the 2014 911 Turbo came first. Then after that, I tried a 2018 911 GT3, non-RS, but it also came with the PDK instead of the manual. And that thing is a monster. I actually recently described it on a Discord server as a car built almost exclusively out of heroin. It's so addictive.
Nice.
Yeah.
You should make greeting cards.
I should, actually. I've made a few.
You made me feel like heroin.
Hallmark hasn't really responded yet, but I'm sure they'll go back to me anytime
soon. I'm sure there's a market for you.
Yeah. Actually, before the 911 even happened, I rented a 718 Cayman GTS, and that was a 2017, I believe. And the four-cylinder engines, I'm sorry, I'm not a fan. They're powerful, they're punchy, they're responsive, and they sound like an old man gargling rocks.
That's the thing. It's a sound, right? It's got to sound good too. Mm-hmm.
And every enthusiast know what, you know, what the engine sound is, you know, what that means to them.
Yep.
And then so after the GT3, which is amazing, I could talk an entire podcast about just that car alone. But moving on, I also tried a 2016 Porsche Cayman GT4. Just drove down yesterday to what is that town called? Tustin, California.
Okay.
And tested it at a dealership there for about 10 minutes. And that was a very positive experience as well. But since I'm used to the sort of slap your face, press you back in the seat acceleration, that car does not have it. It has 385 crank horsepower and kind of tall gearing in first and second. It's fast.
Mm-hmm.
But is it, I need to text someone about how fast this is fast? No.
Right.
But it is a driver-centric car. The shifter is great. The clutch and pedal setup is great for, you know, heel toe. It has reg matching and it does all the cool Porsche stuff. And the interiors are very similar between 911s and Caymans. But it didn't have that X factor where I'm just like, wow.
How important is the manual transmission to you?
I would say probably it's about 70-30 right now. And the only reason it's even that weighted for 30% against a manual transmission is the Porsche PDK. That dual clutch has been engineered so well, it is the only transmission that shifts for itself that can beat me in a shift in a manual. I am an incredibly quick shifter with the manuals, and honestly, sometimes it's not even that good for my transmission, but I'm very fast. And every other automatic transmission until that PDK has been slower than me. And now I have been bested. And that thing is an engineering marvel. It's the pinnacle of what they can do with that thing. So yeah, that's the only reason it's 30%. If you had asked me a week and a half ago before I tried any of this stuff, it would have been 95.5%. Because there are use cases where automatics are pretty good for stuff.
What's the most fun? I'm going to pull you to the side again here. What's the most fun manual transmission that Bo has ever driven in Bo's entire life?
Ooh, that's a good question. I have driven probably about maybe a dozen and a half. I got to the car scene actually relatively late, right? I got my license at 20, so I haven't, you know, even had it that long, even though I'm 40 plus now.
40 plus what?
40 plus one.
Oh, okay.
So
just
I don't,
a baby.
Right. you know, you say that, but I have so many opinions about back pain that I feel like I'm kind of in that club now.
You're in the club.
Yeah. But yeah, so I got my license late, and I didn't really start getting into cars until I was about 25, 26. And I have my friend Brian, who lives now in Colorado, to thank for that. He drove me around in a 2004 Terminator Cobra, the Ford SVT Cobra, and it sucked the breath out of me when he hit the accelerator. That's why I'm here. That's everything. out of all the best manuals that we talked about before we go down another tangent, I believe the best manual I've ever actually tried myself.
Like your favorite, because that can be two different things.
Yeah. Okay. So
Something that's best without question could, you know, it may not necessarily be your favorite.
I've been told I have semi-questionable tastes at times, so my favorite almost never is actually what is best. I absolutely loved the shifter in my 91 NSX when I had it. Rest in peace, 2013 to 2016. It was the standard 5-speed that comes with it. And even though the third gear synchro was a little bit wonky, I just loved that shifting action. You know, got my own personal shift knob for it because it's a Honda, and bang, 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 5 gears. Excellent. That's probably my favorite. And obviously I have a bias there because I love NSXs so much, Jay. That's why you and I are friends.
That's why we are friends. That's a fact. That's how we met.
Absolute fact. As far as like the best one I've ever driven, the Cayman GT4 is up there. That one gets an honorable mention. It's really crisp. But I actually got a chance to drive my friend Ty's 997 Cayman Carrera S, excuse me. And he has a manual on it. And that thing has a snick, snick, metal on metal precision that I've never, ever encountered before. And this is recent too. This is in the last couple of weeks as well.
Sure.
And it's part of the influence of my journey here. But that thing is so precise and well-machined. You know, like, I'm not a watch guy, but I can imagine that's kind of the mechanism types that people talk about when they talk about watches, right? That precision and that crafted engineering. That's my favorite. That's not my favorite, but that's the best one I've seen. So the GT4, and then, of course, today I also saw 2017 NSX. Unfortunately, I was not allowed to drive it.
What was this at? Was it Acura Peoria?
It was Acura Peoria.
Why were you not allowed? Were you not allowed to drive, or didn't have an opportunity to drive it?
Well, the NSX is kind of a rare bird, right? Like you said yourself previously, that there's what, under 3,000 of them right now, the NC1s?
But how can you sell a car if you don't let people drive it? Because with that car, factually, with that car, I know people who, like NSX owners, who didn't really like the car until they drove the car, then they bought the car.
Yes.
Like factually.
That's true.
And if Acura wanted to sell, because that was their problem initially, they weren't doing any test drives.
Yes.
And then they started doing these events like they did one here in Scottsdale, and they sold 7 cars that night.
Absolutely.
From that event.
Have you noticed that, especially with Japanese supercar makes, there's a big subjective element that people need to experience before they get a full picture?
Yeah.
And the NSX is definitely one of them. The thing about it is that it's been around for 4 years now, and, you know, unfortunately, this is going to be the last year they make them. But anybody who's actually wanted to check one out, you know, because there was a lot of hype around it before it came out, and then there was a lot of, let's say, mixed opinion and criticism when it actually released.
Like every car.
Right. But anybody who wanted one probably had a chance to actually look at one, especially because they're in such a high tax bracket. So now that the reputation of those cars are pretty much cemented in anybody who wanted to have an opinion about them, there are a lot of people out there still buying them, especially in this market, for sight unseen.
Right.
They just know what it is. They want one, and they're willing to pay for it. And that's kind of what happened here. And I talked to the salesman, and the car is actually owned by one of the people who actually own the dealership. And he knows what he has, to quote that trite phrase. And I can also respect the fact that he doesn't want people who aren't absolutely in love with it and definitely want to get it driving it. And luckily for me, I've actually driven one before. One of those test drive experiences that you talked about, I was actually present for one.
Okay.
They issued that invitation to anybody who'd ever had an NSX before, and even my humble little 91 counted. And it's good, right? I just wanted to reevaluate it based on the 9/11 perceptions that I developed recently. And unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to do that.
What about the Lotus?
There was a 2020 Lotus Evora GT. It's actually in Scottsdale with the dealership, the McLaren dealership there. McLaren Scottsdale is, I think, the name of the dealership. And I was there with my friend Martin. Great guy, by the way. You should really meet him. The Evora, unfortunately, on Saturdays, they only have one guy there on the lot. And, of course, he has to kind of keep an eye on things.
Hold on. Marty, say hi.
Hey, guys.
Marty says hi.
I don't know if you heard him, but he's out. He's here.
Yes.
He came in like a bodyguard, this guy.
You know, you can tell he works out, right? He keeps himself healthy.
I was going off the mustache.
Also, the mustache is quite nice, and if I could grow one like that, I totally would. I have to actually consult a doctor before I can grow a mustache like that. So.
Asian problems.
Yes, that's true. I don't have a lot of facial hair. Oh, yes, McLaren's. So the Evora is there. And unfortunately, since he's alone, he can't, you know, send me out on a test drive. But I did get to sit in it. Martin got to sit in it. We talked about its ergonomics and the fact that it has no cup holders, which for any true enthusiast isn't a deal breaker.
But like still, I
said, yeah, back
pain. Some little things.
Back pain and cup holders.
Yeah.
And it's great. It's a really nice, really pretty car, 2020. And he never drove it. It has only 220 miles when he traded it in.
Why?
And
do you know why? Why do you think that is?
There are some cars, I think, that people want to appreciate more as collectibles or works of art mm-hmm. than as vehicular interactions or experiences. And while I would have assumed that an Evora would be on the vehicular experience aspect of it more, they also retain their value really well in this crazy, crazy auto market that we have. So I can understand why somebody would want to keep that pristine. And I was also told by the guy there that I think that guy has something like 40 cars. So maybe he just didn't get around to it. When you have 40 cars, like you know, you're talking about a Hot Wheels collection only in real life. So you've got them everywhere. You can do whatever you want.
I've had 40 cars on test drive unlimited too.
Yeah. And didn't you feel like a boss once you got all those 40 cars?
I did.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I'm sure that guy has zero self-esteem issues whatsoever. Unfortunately, I'm not that fortunate.
So the Lotus Evora at McLaren Scottsdale.
Mm-hmm.
No McLarens on your list. Why? Is it just the price point or you just know that they're all steaming piles of poop? They're beautiful.
For the record, Jay, I just want to go on record and say that I don't actually think McLarens are steaming piles of poop. I would have to disagree with you in that regard. Now we you know we're both fans of Acura, so I can understand where that opinion stems from.
No, it has nothing to do with Acura. I think a lot of the McLaren cars are beautiful. Yeah. I love the 720S. Like I love that car.
Yeah.
But everywhere you look, McLarens are breaking down or having stupid issues here and there, and I have yet to find anyone who's ever had an issue with a McLaren to have a positive resolution of said issue. Like that's a thing. That's okay. Why I say that.
Sure.
Nothing to do with the styling of the cars.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah. You know, I mean, those YouTube videos are out there, right? People have bought them and said, here's my experience. And it's not always been positive.
I mean, there's people in the Phoenix area.
Yeah.
But anyway, how come there's not a McLaren on your list?
Well, I mean, the plural of anecdote isn't data, right? I just want to get that out there. But at the same time, it's mostly a money thing. You know, McLarens, they also stopped depreciating in this market. And the 570S, I mean, starts close to 200K.
Right.
I found that there are certain levels of money that are maybe just a little bit too rich for my blood.
Understood.
Yeah. And also, I do worry about, you know, British cars. They have that reputation of not always being 100% reliable. If I'm going to spend this kind of money, you know, and it's a lot of money for me, too. It's not like I just go out there and buy this, like, you know, $100,000 bubblegum or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
When I have that kind of experience, I want to make sure that it's pretty trouble-free.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's reasonable.
Yeah. And so I'm a little bit nervous about it, but I know that my wife specifically also enjoys the McLaren aesthetic, so I can't completely rule them out, but I can try to make sure that I'm on a reasonable footing with like how I perceive them and how much I want them.
There's some older ones.
Yeah.
Some, what, 20? When did the...
The effects machine?
The MP...
The MP412C?
Yeah. Well, when did that... And then when they gave it a facelift, like those are still out there. No interest in any of those?
I do like them. I talked to a guy named Todd actually about a year and a half ago when we were on a drive together and he has an MP412C. I believe it's a 2012. I think they were from 2011 to 2014. Don't quote me on that. But around that time period, right? And it was the forefront McLaren of the day. It wasn't like a 570S. That's
Is
kind
it
of like a
little pre-facelift one?
Yeah, pre-facelift. And it's nice. It sounds great.
I've always thought that kind of looked like the natural successor to the NSX.
Because yeah.
it shares a lot of the design elements of like the 2000-2005 facelift NSX, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. It's certainly got those associations for sure. The context is definitely there. And especially with not much else being in that sort of space, right? You could maybe argue that an Audi R8 would sort of also slot. No, I'm getting a head shake.
I'm shaking
from
my head. No.
Yep. Yeah. So, but like, you know, there are other cars that might have a little bit of tangibility for that relation.
To be fair, there's a lot of NSX guys that bought an R8
yeah.
to have in the stable when they right. came out.
because, you know, thematically, an NSX was always a mid-engine exotic that you could daily.
Daily, yeah.
And the Audi R8 is also a mid-engine exotic-ish that you could probably also daily. So stuff like that, right? It kind of fits that ethos.
No Gallardo dreams?
Not really.
Is it Gallardo or Gallardo? Because I heard, and I don't know if anyone really actually knows how to say it.
So interesting that you would mention that, because I actually did a little bit of research on that name based on some journalist reports about reviews and things like that, and also Lamborghini's own test drivers. Now, there's a I'm terrible with names, but I know that there's a Lamborghini test driver out there that actually helped the review process for one of the journals reviewing that car. And I'm avoiding saying the name for obvious reasons, because I'm probably going to mangle it as well. But in the Spanish context of what the name is for Gallardo, you would say it as Gallardo, like a Y instead of the double L, right? But what the journalist found out is that the Italian test driver actually pronounced it Gallardo.
Mm.
So there's actually two minds of this. Because the names are typically related to Spanish concepts, right? Murciélago means bat. And it only means bat because there was like a bull that I guess was named that, right? Mm. And Gallardo is actually kind of similar in that respect, in that context. So you could say Gallardo and pretty much have it be okay. But since Lamborghini is an Italian company and their own Italian test drivers say Gallardo, if you say Gallardo. That too, it should still be okay.
I would say Gallardo based on those rules,
yeah.
Right? Because it's the same thing. I think when it comes to proper naming, then all the grammatical rules go out the window.
Yes. Yes.
So if it's called a Gallardo, then it's a Gallardo. It's like Portillo's versus, you know, have you ever been to Portillo's?
Of course.
It's, we had talked about it. It's like, is it Portillo's or Portillo's? It's Portillo's.
It's Portillo's.
Yeah.
But I mean, Portillo, does that have an Italian source root? I don't know.
I think it does.
Yeah, it could be.
Because of the shit that they sell. So why no Gallardo's for you?
I never saw it as a particularly appealing car. And also, the farther you go back into Gallardo territory, I'm going to adopt the moniker now, the Gallardo. The further you back you go,
Guillermo drives a Gallardo.
Guillermo drives a Gallardo. Say that 10 times fast.
Yes.
But back to the actual car. I've known people who own them and I think they're wonderful cars, but I don't personally want to own one because the price range of them becoming affordable also tends to make them a lot slower. Like this is where the Corvette really punches above its weight.
Yeah.
So the Corvette's going to be stonking fast compared to older Gallardos. And honestly, a lot of those cars simply get eliminated for that factor alone. I know I'm kind of a, you know, horsepower addict. I get it. But it is my bias, and I will admit that now.
Let me ask you this. First, just because you would just mention about the Corvette punching above its waist, its weight.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you who the front runner is and all the cars you're looking at. I'm guessing it's a Porsche, which, by the way, Porsche versus Porsche, Gallardo versus Gallardo, it is Porsche, which you have said yourself.
Yep.
Do you think that there's an internal struggle? Like, how do they do this at Chevy in trying to make sure that the Corvette, or in my opinion, make sure that the Camaro isn't so much more different than the Corvette? It's like there's got to be some sibling rivalry because they're very similar.
Oh yes,
and they look completely different.
Sure.
I mean, it's the same company spitting out two high performance in one case, multiple trends. I guess in both cases, multiple trends. But I mean, How the hell do they try to balance that?
Oh, gee. I mean, you know, I don't
work
for GM.
I know you don't work
for
GM. Yeah. I mean, you're in IT.
I am in IT. I am what they would call a computer nerd.
He's wearing a Skynet shirt.
Oh, yeah, I am. I also have a particular problem that I always forget what shirt I'm wearing. Yesterday, someone said nice shirt, and I had to look down at it, and
it
I realized
like, fuck you.
I was wearing that smudge meme shirt. It's that white cat that, you know, no like vegetals.
Yeah.
And I had no idea I was wearing it until he said it. Back to cars. I honestly can't say definitively what I think is going on there. But what I think is that the Camaro and the Corvette actually probably service different demographics. And the overlap is narrow enough that they could probably get away with it. But also, the more they amortize the cost of development for hardware that goes into high performance cars, the more they spread the love, the less expensive it's going to be for everyone, including them, to make. And they're going to be able to share parts and have more ubiquity for things like supporting the cost and supporting the platform.
Let's back up.
Yeah.
How would you describe Camaro guy? Camaro person. I don't want to get canceled. How would you describe Camaro person?
Oh, geez.
And how would you describe Corvette person?
Jay, that's such a loaded question. You know that. That's a loaded question.
That's why
loaded
I asked these. I asked the hard questions.
Yeah. I mean, they...
Have fun with it.
There are stereotypes.
We all know who Mustang person is.
Yes, yes, we do. And yeah, that's indisputable, right? Like,
right.
But I believe that Camaro and Corvette people, you know, they're probably a little bit more varied, but yes, there are traits. And let me go over a few of those, right? I think that a Camaro guy is probably slightly younger than a Corvette guy, at least until the C8 came out, where the demographic is starting to actually shift. And, you know, you can talk to Jim about that officially. The Camaro guys tend to be younger because especially the lower trims are more accessible for people who are younger and maybe in different tax brackets.
So it's for poor people.
I did not say that, Jay. I don't think of people as rich or poor, you know. There's a perception out there, like
it's
a lot
for
of
the people who have more bales of hay than the people who don't.
Let's say disposable
so,
income.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, right. I mean, I hear what you're saying, like the entry level, right? Because if you get a Camaro RS, like a rental car grade, it's nothing.
Right.
Like you have to get, in my opinion, you have to either get an SS, a 2SS, is it the ZL1?
Yeah.
Like the badass one.
That's the enthusiast.
I mean, that's it, right? And then there's no like starter Corvette, really. I mean,
not really.
Really?
No. Yeah. The starter Corvette is, you know, once you actually have some money burning a hole in your back pocket and you want to do it, right?
Right.
And there's a million ways to do that. But yeah, the Camaro is more accessible. And I think that it's important, especially for car people. Like I didn't start out looking at Porsches, right? I started out looking at like Nissan Sentras. So I think it's important for people to want to aspire to things and also want to like have reaches that may be greater than the current stances, but, you know, still aspire to have a longer reach, aspire to have bigger things. And I think that is hope, and hope is really useful for things like aspiration. So, so I think that, like, you know, it doesn't actually knock the Camaro people that they might be younger or they might be less financially fortunate.
Sure.
Because it's just a tie-in to make sure that they can still develop a passion, right? So aside from them being younger, though, I think that they're probably a little bit more playful. I see Camaros at, you know, meets like Cars and Coffee and stuff, and I think they probably also have a little bit more energy. They want to show off a little bit more, and that's not a bad thing either.
These are just loose observations,
of my own personal anecdotal experience.
Right.
And, you know, they're more likely to probably film themselves in their cars or film their cars or have shoots with them and, you know, really make it their own because it's so more accessible, like I said before, which means that when they start doing things to it, there's a bigger sky. There's a bigger limit for that.
Let me help you out here.
Yeah.
Corvette guy is old white guy, socks pulled up to his knees.
Statistically, statistically is what I like to say.
It's the midlife crisis, just retired or getting ready to retire. And that's not, I mean, I know tons of Corvette owners. One of my best friends is in the Corvette world and it's a woman.
Yeah. Yes, they do exist in the Corvette world.
Yes. Yes,
Jay. Good job. The thing about Corvettes is that, they used to depreciate, right? So, you know, a lot of second and third owners would be in a similar Camaro demographic and they'd be able to transition over. And, it was, you know, again, aspirations. But you're right. I have had many people, I want to say many, it's like a half dozen over 2 years. I've had at least a few people come up to me at gas stations or whatever when I'm, you know, just filling up the car or just playing around with it in the parking lot. And the demographic has been exclusively, without exception, elderly white men. Nobody else comes up and talks to me about that car except for that demographic. And I don't mind them. They're very pleasant. They always like the car. We talk about stuff. And, you know, I like to learn about my cars too. So we have great conversations. You know, they're nice people. We go on our merry way. And it's fine. But that definitely happens. I don't own any jean shorts. I'll just say that right now. I don't own any New Balances. But once I bought the car, I did actually go on the website. And I did not actually oppose any of those things.
You were shopping. You're like, do they have New Balance?
Yeah, they're comfortable. I didn't know that. You know, I wear you know, Nikes and stuff. You know, I used to be young.
They're easy on the feet. Yeah.
They are.
That's why old people wear them.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's actually what a classic runner shoe, really, at the end of the day. That's what New Balance is.
Yeah, they're well engineered and they're made in the United States. You know? So that's nice.
America.
Yeah, America.
Here's the deal, and it's we'll wrap this up, but when I think about Corvette owner,
mm-hmm.
most of the time, if I see just like a run-of-the-mill Stingray,
mm-hmm.
that fits the stereotypical demographic of the Corvette owner. But almost everyone that I've ever known that's had a Z06
Yeah.
Has been younger, almost fit what you described, the Camaro guy, usually fit Z06 guy, kind of a badass. Like, I know I'm a badass in this badass car because I am and this is.
Ugh.
You know, and I mean, with the exception of you, you know, I mean, you're a cool guy. You're a badass dude to me, but you don't strike me as this badass.
It is true.
Eat my Z06, because my favorite Corvette ever is actually the C7 Z06. Yeah. Every time I see one, I'm like, God, that is a badass car.
They're lovely. And yes, it is true that when I walk into a room, all 5'6" of me, and I also lost a bunch of weight, so I don't even look like I have, you know, I don't even look like I have like some kind of eating problem where I might be get aggro about carbs. I just look like somebody maybe a little bit younger than I actually am. And I'm not imposing at all. And the best I try to do is just be friendly and nice so that, you know, people don't try to eat me.
Miss the ponytail.
Yes. I used to have long hair. That is a request typically done by my significant others.
Mm-hmm.
And what I essentially tell them, and my wife definitely for now, is, hey, you control my hair. I will relinquish control of my hair and its design to you. Do whatever you feel is appropriate. And she, bless her soul again, she's been very nice and considerate about it. She knows that I don't like long hair because it's very hot in the Arizona sun.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've come up with a couple of haircuts that are really nice. But almost all of them, the dates I've had, they've always preferred that long hair. And I could always go back to it too. If my wife says, hey, I want you to have a ponytail next year, I'll be like, cool, let's do it. You know.
And in exchange, you can drive whatever you want. So yeah. Who are the front runners in the vehicles you're test driving? I think I volunteered Porsche for you, but I don't think I ever got an official answer. And when do you think you're going to wrap up your decision?
Another great question, Jay. Really appreciate all the insights here. But I think that right now it's a toss-up between the 911 Turbo, around 2016-ish, 2015-ish, so 991.1, and the 991.1, again, GT3, non-RS. I found a few on the internet with some pretty reputable dealers and private sellers. I've talked to them. They're super nice about everything. And the cars look good. And they're in the right price for what I'm trying to do. So those are the two runners, especially because I've actually test driven both of those. And they do inspire some of that passion that I really enjoy. The NSX has kind of fallen a little bit more off the wayside simply because I can't seem to get seat time in one. So I can't rekindle that joy. The Evora, I keep on getting told to try the Evora. So I'll probably do a test drive for that this coming week when there's labor force to actually help me with that. But yeah, those two 911s are probably front runners. Yeah. Now, there is one big wild card that I do want to talk about. And that wild card is getting a...
Stay tuned on the next Hard Parking Podcast. No, go ahead.
That one wild card is actually a Cayman GT4 that I've already test driven. Oh, right?
Another Porsche.
But it's slow. But here's the kicker, right?
Such a great track car from what I understand.
It is essentially a slot car for the track, yes. But there are a couple of tuning shops out there. I don't want to call them tuning shops because it sounds like they're one-dimensional. They're not. They're engineers, right? I think it's a Demand Motorsports, DEMAN. They make a bored and stroked out Cayman block, that six-cylinder engine, right? The one with the nice sounds, not the crappy gravel sounds. They will stroke and bore that thing out to 4.5 liters. It will make over 500 wheel horse, and it will go in a car like a Cayman that's 3,000 pounds.
Yeah, it's.
And it'll knock your socks off. All for the low, low price starting at $30,000 on top of the car you bought.
That's a very 90s reference there.
Is it?
Knocking socks off.
Oh, right. You see, I'm actually old.
Jay. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I can say things like it's lit or fleek or things like that.
I don't even know what that means. I know what lit means. It means, yeah.
My kids sometimes...
I haven't done the fleek thing.
Yet. Yeah, they send me memes and I have to go understand what they are. I don't mind studying to try and communicate with younger people. I think that they're going to be the future and I want to talk to them and I want them to talk to me. Of course, you know, venerated, experienced people like yourself, Jay.
Yeah.
Also very, very desirable to talk to.
We just gave each other this long romantic look. Bo, I want to thank you for coming into the studio.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You'll have to let us know what your decision is on your next vehicle.
Absolutely. I'm thinking about 1 to 3 weeks, and I've had a lot of sleepless nights. I assume there's going to be more, but I'm going to make a decision. Thanks, Jay.
I want to thank Bo Jung and his friend Martin for stopping by the studio. If you have a vote of which vehicle Bo should pick up, let us know. hardparkingpodcast@gmail.com. Let me know. You know how to get a hold of me. Bo and I go back several years. If you've been on social media for a while, you may have seen at some point there was a baby blue NSX with a Nyan cat on there. That's the cat that has kind of like this rainbow and like 8-bit behind it. In fact, a lot of people know DJ Deadmau5 for doing that to a Ferrari. And then I think like Ferrari, I don't know, either made him take it off or they banned him from ever buying a new Ferrari again. Kind of silly shit. But Bo was the first one. He had that on his NSX. I don't know. Those are some solid cars. The Porsche, I would say. I mean, obviously, I'm partial to the NSX, but I think that Porsche Turbo would be really nice. I've heard nothing but good things. I have yet to drive one of those cars. Maybe one day. What do you think? Right, Honda at Escosta, Arizona. Higher quality detail at Tempe, Arizona. Boosterbath.com, foilonline.com, tongtrees.com, and Cell Shop Wireless Services. Can't forget The Credit Mix and Patreon business supporter Kuya Automotive out of Winter Garden, Florida. Also want to thank Mark Stoneman, Catherine Cox, Eddie Ramos, Richard Graves, Byron Jones, and the man you just heard, Bo Jung, as they are all patrons as well. If you're in a position to help the podcast upgrade, you can join the Patreon for as little as $3 a month and get access to bonus audio as well as show swag. I think I'm going to do something special for all of those supporters for this year. Usually at the end of the year, I try to just do something special for people that, you know, take care of the people who take care of you. I wish I could do something for all you listeners too. Maybe I should. So if you have any ideas, maybe I should throw something out there. Let me know. Let me know if I should do some sort of a giveaway. If you're interested in picking up a Hard Parking Podcast shirt, email the show, hardparkingpodcast@gmail.com, or send me a message on any of the social media platforms that you typically find me or the show. You can find me on Instagram at jfenning, that's J-H-A-E-P-F-E-N-N-I-N-G, or jtravels, J-H-E underscore travels. You can join the Hard Parking Violations Facebook page and find me on YouTube, youtube.com, Hard Parking Media. Maybe it's Hard Parking Podcast. I don't even know what my URL is anymore. Don't forget to catch myself and Wes Tankersley on One Drink Wednesdays, Instagram Live exclusive. And finally, I can't grow without you telling the world how great this show is. So let's do this. Let's grow this thing together. And I will talk to you all next week.
Now it's stripping time.
Shut up!
Hey, this is Levi Epps, hashtag Mr. Financial Freedom of The Credit Mix, here with a special offer for Hard Parking Podcast fans. If you've been living with less than perfect credit for having evictions, late payments, bankruptcies, doesn't matter what it is, if it's something that negatively impacts your credit score and you're not able to get approvals for certain things, or maybe you got to pay large deposits and high interest rates, we don't want that to be you anymore. We have a program that will legally get negative items off of your credit report and keep them off. And we have a special code for a free consultation to see if we can help you. Text HP Credit to 7374 Credit. That's HP Credit to 737-427-3348. Let's get you back on the road to financial freedom.
Are you tired of your dog losing its cool in a thunderstorm or fireworks? You might want to look at Tongue Treats. TongueTreats.com. High anxiety relief, pain relief, inflammation relief. It's a direct connection between the tongue and the brain. Doesn't waste time going down to the stomach, where it gets broken down, enters the bloodstream, then to the brain eventually. By then, little Izzy, my dog, has been hiding under the house for like 20 minutes. The Tongue Treat CBD strips provide rapid results for your pet with the right amount of CBD, which is not psychoactive. It's important to test and verify your pet is getting the proper dosage. A single strip should be enough. Have doubts? There's certified analysis from a lab available on the website. Think about it. Efficacy and economy. Tongue Treats.